Well, I guess first, the businessman who spent millions developing Kapiti Airport and attracting Air New Zealand to fly there from Auckland says he's disgusted at the carrier's decision to scrap the service. Air New Zealand announced last week that it would pull out of its daily Auckland service from Paraparaumu on the Kapiti coast, giving just 3 weeks' notice. Sir Noel Robinson was the original owner of the airport and invested $15 million in its upgrade, ultimately getting the national carrier to establish the service. He sold to Todd Property Group several years ago and no longer has any financial interest. Air New Zealand is still 52% owned by the government, and its most recent board appointment is the former Prime Minister John Key. Sir Noel says the Kapiti Coast to Auckland service has over 85% loading and is profitable in a region that's expected to grow by a fifth in the next 2 decades, and where a major new expressway from the capital is under construction. 3 years ago, Air New Zealand pulled out of flying to a number of smaller regional centres, citing unprofitability. Sir Noel Robinson is with us from Rotorua. Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Did you have any sense that this was going to happen?
No, none at all. No, first I heard about it was when it was announced on the news.
What's the backstory of the conversations you had with Air New Zealand in negotiating for them to provide the service in the first place?
Well, it took quite a long time. We talked to Air New Zealand and they were quite interested. But there was a lot of upgrades that were needed. The runway hadn't been upgraded for 40 years or something like that. And so we had to upgrade the whole runway. We had to put in a control tower and Airways Corporation had to be set up. The FAA had to have all the approvals organised. We had to then build a terminal. And so there was a huge amount of investment needed before Air New Zealand could commit. But we worked very closely with the Chief Executive Fife and Norm Thompson, and they were very positive about it. And the other reason, of course, was that Wellington Airport's on one of the major fault lines, and to have a backup airport for our capital, particularly for civil defence and safety reasons, is another very, very important point. And that was also taken into consideration. So we did all those things, and then Air New Zealand started, and it went off reasonably well to begin with. The level of sort of taking up has sort of slowly increased. So now it's about, I believe, I'm only hearing the second hand, but I believe it's about 85% loading, which is very, very good.
What were you told would be necessary in order to sustain the service? What loading? Which is just the number of people on the plane or the percentage of the plane seats that are filled.
I can't remember exactly the exact figure, but it was somewhere around 60 to 65%.
So they're over 80%, as you understand it.
Yep. And the thing, what we did, we picked five other regional airports similar size to Kapiti, and we worked out what the average landing fee was, and we said we'll guarantee that it would never be more than 80% of those average landing fees. So the landing fees were very, very low. And to make it very competitive for Air New Zealand to be based there.
Landing fees is what an airport company charges airlines to use the airport. So this was very competitive with neighbouring airports, be it Palmerston North or be it Wellington.
Not Wellington, because the major airports have a lot higher landing fees because of this is the sub-regional airport.
Sure, but you made it competitive relative to others.
So there are other sub-regional airports. You know, if it was Wellington, it would be about four times as much, I think.
All right. What was the resistance at the beginning? What were some of the things that you had to work through? 2011, I think, the service launched. So it's gone 7 years. It's not like it's still in pilot phase, if you pardon the pun. And pilots were an issue, actually, I think, weren't they? There was a talk, the logistics for Air New Zealand. What were some of the issues they raised logistically?
Well, the major issue was, without question, the first one was safety. we had to meet all the requirements for an airport that has passengers, you know, paying passengers, which is a lot higher than sort of the local airports, like, you know, that that don't have passenger services, you know, for private planes and things like that. So, and we had to be audited to make sure we achieved that. That was the most important thing. And part of that audit is having a runway that is satisfactory, having a terminal that meets all the requirements and the safety for getting people on and off planes and baggage control and things like that.
Hence the $15 million. All right.
Yeah.
So it's been running for these years, and what has the impact been on the region? Because your rationale for it initially, obviously, was in part as a business investment. You no longer, as we say, have had any financial interest in it now. But what else have you seen happening for this community? As we said, it's a rapidly growing area, likely to become increasingly so once Transmission Gully's completed. And I think the projections are for at least a 20% increase in its population over the next two decades. What has having the airport there meant for the community?
Well, it's huge. It's Transmission Gully is one of the most underrated things that's going to happen. It's going to absolutely transform the Kapiti Coast. It'll make it a suburb of Wellington. And it, you know, at peak periods, I believe, will take about 20 minutes off the travel time. So it'll be just over half an hour. So it's going to have a huge difference. And businesses will go out there. A lot of people will shift their businesses out to the Kapiti Coast, and there's been a lot of talk about that. But people who want to shift businesses, they want to see the other things happen first, and particularly like for an airport to make sure that it's viable. So they want to make sure everything's up and operating properly, and then they'll shift things out. Well, that could change quite dramatically if the airport is now not going to be operating as a, you know, with Air New Zealand. That could make a huge difference to the decision-making process. And there's been a lot of small businesses have built up around the airport because of the airport, and of course they all miss out. But it's the Kapiti Coast. The community there is. I've been very privileged. They're the nicest group of people you could wish to meet. They're really proud of the Kapiti Coast, the lovely beaches of the Kapiti Island, and there's so much going on there. And they just, you know, and they really just want to, you know, see this place develop and be given opportunity.
So the alternative now is to drive north to Palmerston North Airport or drive south into the capital, into Wellington, which...
Through the CBD at peak period, which will be a nightmare. And what north to Palmerston is an hour and a quarter.
What was the service doing, though? Because you mentioned businesses. Was it doing much freight? What are we talking about with the...
It's the smallest
plane they were running, pretty much, wasn't it? So how many people were able to get on that Auckland flight anyway?
About 70.
Righto. Okay, so that's a reasonable size passenger flight, but probably not significant freight, although that remains possible with the infrastructure, as long as the infrastructure stays.
Yeah, it might be slightly less. I just can't remember the number.
Yeah,
it's a Q300.
It's the Bombardier, which I think holds up to 50 seats. But that,
50 seats, no, right. I think that's correct. Yeah, that's correct.
What do you believe has happened then behind this decision? As we said, there was a move, and we had the Chief Executive on when this happened 3 years ago. We've invited him back this morning. He's unavailable today. But 3 years ago, they withdrew from a number of regional airports, regional centres, citing unprofitability, and they said, look, smaller players will come in, some of the smaller airlines will come in and pick up the slack.
That hasn't happened, of course, to the level of... but the thing is...
What do you believe is behind the decision? If you're telling me it's profitable, what's the rationale?
And if you ask Air New Zealand, they'll say it's profitable as well. There's no question about that. What they're saying is it's a reliability of the service. And that can be caused by weather. the airport's closed down, but the airport closes less than Wellington Airport. We're not as vulnerable as Wellington. And then there is mechanical problems, which causes delays. And finally, staffing, for flying the planes. The majority of the reasons for the unreliability is in Air New Zealand's responsibility.
Do you believe there's do you have a theory that there's something else going on?
I'm a bit of a sceptic, so please don't take this too, but it seems fishy to me, if I must say.
Well, the need for the planes perhaps to be servicing somewhere else, was that part of what you're thinking? Because it does from time to time, and it has been open about this in the past year or two, it will from time to time shift aeroplanes around in order to put all the pieces of the puzzle together. And do you think that's a factor here?
I think so, yeah, absolutely.
But you don't know?
But that's all it can be, because it's profitable. So the only thing is reliability, and that's the only other issue. And reliability relating to mechanical problems, that's one issue, but it's the staffing of those other. The other issue relating to reliability is staffing. But the other thing is, which is quite important also, is Air New Zealand sort of transferring the planes to areas that have a more higher demand than Parapuram?
Well, it's entitled to do that. It is still 52% taxpayer-owned. It was much larger after it was bailed out, but it's 52% taxpayer-owned. So the ability for the government to say there is some kind of public interest strategy here that might be aligned to what's happening with Transmission Gully, trying to relieve housing pressures in Wellington, trying to relieve transport pressures all round, you could argue that for a strategic position from the government's perspective, but not necessarily from the company's perspective. So is it just making a hardline decision here?
Well, it's certainly, that's exactly what's happened. But I would have thought the reason why the government has got over 50% shareholding in the company is because they want to look at, it's the national carrier. That's what I think, and they have got a responsibility because it's very hard for other players to come in for such a small country.
Is it a case of use it or lose it? Because I've also seen some speculation press.
I've actually said that to the community many times. I've always made that comment, use it or lose it. And there's no question about that.
But is there a risk that this land owned by a major property group, if they can't make money out of it as an airport on the scale that it's been built to, and presumably your investment in upgrading it is reflected in whatever they paid for the airport, is there a risk that they'll turn that land over or seek to turn that land over to another purpose? We mentioned housing. There is a huge demand for more housing development in the broader Wellington region, including up the coast. Is that a risk?
A huge risk. Huge. Todd Property are very good operators, but they are in developing housing, and that is an when we bought the airport initially, believe it or not, the land was zoned public open space, and we got the zoning changed to airport core plus a part of the on the Cabot Road to a Business 5 development. So we've had it rezoned, so they'll have to go to a public hearing to get that changed.
Well, again, you're looking at a commercial firm looking at its return on investment. And if this now does not give it the return on investment that an alternative use might, there is nothing stopping it going, or at least attempting to go through a rezoning process, is it?
Absolutely.
How long is the piece of string before, unless another airline, smaller airline, or other airline can come in and maintain the airport for the purposes for which presumably that investment went in, how long do you think there is a risk that there'll be an attempt to put that land to an alternative use?
Well, I'm only, you know, I haven't got all the background information, but it's a serious risk.
Do you think the government, as a 50% plus owner of Air New Zealand, should be having a look at this one from a broader strategic view?
Absolutely. That's been my issue. And the thing is, for the chief executive just to come out and make an announcement until the mayor last Thursday, it's pretty arrogant, in my view.
Thank you for your time. So Noel Robinson, who was the businessman who originally did spend millions developing Kapiti Airport at Paraparaumu on the Kapiti coast in order to enable Air New Zealand to provide a daily service. That happened from 2011 through till now, with Air New Zealand announcing it is now withdrawing that service. There has been some interest expressed by smaller operators, but they too have had very short notice about what is happening. And as we said, we had a request in to speak to the Chief Executive, Christopher Luxon, about Paraparaumu and also about some of the regional strategy that has unfolded over the last 2 or 3 years, just to see where the company is at on that. He is unavailable today.